Welcome to the Mummy Fit Time podcast, a place for busy women to find the secrets towards being the best version of themselves, both in physical and mental health. Join me, Nikki Kinnearum, your host and health advocate, as we discover why you might be feeling a certain way, how to move past this, and step into the version of you that brings you the most happiness. Not every woman's journey is the same, but through this podcast, I've no doubt that you will uncover things about yourself and have a little fun along the way. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Mummy Fit Time podcast. This episode is talking about sleep hygiene. Now, sleep hygiene, this is something that I first came across, I guess, this terminology a couple of years ago. And when I first heard this, I immediately thought about a clean bedroom or a clean bed or how clean my sheets are. But sleep hygiene is not, in fact, anything to do with cleanliness. It is to do with ways that you are, practices and methods that you've got for falling asleep and, habits that you would ideally want to form so that you can get the most restorative sleep that you can possibly get through your night or whenever you're undertaking your sleep. So, first of all, before I dive into what sleep hygiene actually is, I wanted to just, put a bit of a precursor on this podcast, because I know that for many of you listening, you may be mums with young children and you may be getting woken up through the night for things that are beyond your control. That is the stage of life that you are at the moment. You've got young children and you need to attend to them. So when I talk about things such as you need to have a full 8 hours sleep or whatever it might be, I want you to just keep in mind that during this current season of your life, that may not be possible. But what can be possible is improving the quality of sleep that you might be able to obtain during those hours where you are able to get sleep in. Other people listening to this podcast, you may not have children, or you may be beyond the years where the children are waking you up through the night, in which case these tips that I'm providing in this podcast may be really useful for you to apply to ensure that you're getting the best sleep that you can be getting through your night as well. So let's get into what sleep hygiene actually is. So I'm going to share some tips around sleep practices that you might want to try to incorporate into your life. And the first one of those is trying to get us to sleep for a minimum of 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night. Now, on average, the average person does require 8 hours of sleep. And there are studies now to prove that people do need around 8 hours of sleep. Yes, we have some of those people that feel that they can function really well on, say, 4 to 5 hours sleep per night. And they may be able to do that for the short term. And by short term, it could be up to a couple of years. But going forward long term, we really do need to be trying to get that 8 hours of sleep through your night and good quality restorative sleep through your night for optimal function and for optimal healing of your body, because sleep is when a lot of healing within your body takes place. So when we're looking at getting 8 hours of sleep, what we want to do is try to establish regular sleep hours. So that is trying to go to bed and wake up in the morning around the same time every day, including on the weekends. Your body gets into a bit of a rhythm. As you know, as humans, we're habitual people. So we strive and thrive around habits and routines. And if you've had young children, you'll certainly know that young children are at their best when they've got a set routine as well. And we're no different as adults. So try to establish your regular sleep hours. Now, one person that I absolutely love to follow is Dr. Libby Weaver, and she talks about sleep trains. So one of the things that she talks about is a sleep train, where the sleep train is where you start to feel that little bit of tiredness through your night. You start to yawn and you start to nod off. And that's a time where you could go to bed and you could easily fall asleep. Or if you do decide to push through that moment, for example, it might be in the middle of a movie, or you might have other tasks that you need to get on with through the night still, you might push on and you suddenly get this third wind and you feel wide awake again. And that happens a couple of times through the evening, moving forward to about 10:30, 11 p.m. at night. So ideally, what you want to try to do is catch one of those sleep trains. When you feel yourself starting to get drowsy and like you could easily fall asleep, use that opportunity to jump on board and actually go to bed and go to sleep, because your body is having that moment where it is ready to fall asleep, and it's going to be much easier to fall asleep. Our stress glands, which is the adrenals, they actually recharge between the hours of 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. So if you're able to jump on that sleep train and get to sleep by around 10:30 at the latest, then optimally what you're doing there is you're giving those adrenals a chance to recharge. And like I said before, your adrenals are responsible. They're your stress glands. So they're responsible for producing adrenaline and cortisol within our body. So if we're not allowing our adrenals to recharge and we're trying to push on beyond that time where our adrenals are generally recharging, which is between the hours of 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., then we're putting ourselves at risk of adrenal fatigue. So I'd like to explore adrenal fatigue in further podcast episodes. But for now, just be aware that adrenal fatigue can show up in a number of ways in our body, particularly our responses to stress and general feelings of exhaustion and fatigue. So ideally, we want to be jumping on that sleep train there. And I mentioned that the adrenals are recharging between the hours of 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. Now, around 2 a.m., what actually happens is your cortisol levels start to rise again. And this is a very natural thing. But if you're not asleep by, say, I guess that 11 p.m. mark, or even pushing through and staying up to 1 a.m., 2 a.m., there's a good chance that you're going to have not a strong restorative sleep, and you're also going to wake easier. Some people wake around 2 a.m., just, I guess, naturally have that wake because the cortisol levels do start to rise. But the issue becomes when you then can't fall back asleep. So this is something we're trying to avoid happening here. Now, one thing, a big sleep hygiene tip is to avoid using a loud alarm clock. So basically, the reasoning behind that is waking up suddenly can be quite a shock to your body. And if you're regularly getting enough sleep, then an alarm clock should be unnecessary, because we've established those regular sleep hours and your body is recharged and refueled for the day ahead. So your body should wake up quite naturally at a time that, I guess, best suits you, because you've got those regular sleep patterns and sleep hours going on there. However, if you are requiring an alarm or you're sleeping through an alarm, this could be an indication that you may be sleep deprived. So ideally, if we are using alarm, you should be awaking just before it goes off. So if you're waking just before your alarm goes off, that's a sign that you probably are getting the amount of sleep that your body requires. Another sleep hygiene tip is to sleep in complete darkness. Now, this is an interesting one, because this is something that I have never been able to do. I guess maybe there's a little bit of fear of the dark there. And certainly when my partner, who travels a lot for work, when he's not around, I feel I need to sleep with a light on. Now, I don't know if that's just because I'm a woman and I feel a little bit anxious with the lights not being on at night, or it could be a number of things. But what I'm trying to get here, my point is that your room should actually be as dark as possible to maintain balance and have no distraction from light. And I guess I can agree with that, because in saying that I do sleep with the light on, it does form a bit of a distraction through the night. I do find that I am waking through the night when my lights are on. That also might be because of that heightened sense of alertness when my partner's away, but that's just a tip that I wanted to share. Now, my partner, he's the complete opposite, and he prefers to sleep in complete darkness and can't stand even a slither of light coming in. So I guess we all have our different habits when it comes to sleep, but preferably if we're looking at our sleep hygiene and we're looking at addressing those issues, then sleeping in complete darkness can certainly help you there. Now, one thing that we want to try to avoid as well is turning on the light if you go to the bathroom during the night. And there's a couple of reasons for this that I'm going to go into a little bit more detail here. And so basically, by turning on that light, even for just a second, it shuts down melatonin production. Now, let me just talk here about what melatonin actually is. So you've got two hormones within your body, which is the serotonin and the melatonin, which are both responsible for, sleeping and waking up. So melatonin is, you experience melatonin once the sun starts going down. So once the sun starts going down and it becomes darker, the melatonin levels in your body begin to rise. And melatonin is what helps us go to sleep and stay asleep through the night. In the morning, we start producing serotonin. So serotonin is the opposite to melatonin. Serotonin is responsible for feeling happy, calm, and content. And serotonin starts to rise as soon as light hits our eyes. Now, in an ideal world, that light hitting our eyes is sunshine. And so we wake up with the sunshine, we've got that happy, calm feeling that comes over us, and we get on with our day until we start to get further into the afternoon and the evening as the light starts to drop and we then fill with melatonin. However, if you're turning on a light, even for just a second, this shuts down melatonin production and serotonin levels start to rise. Serotonin wakes us up. So we want to avoid losing the melatonin levels within our bodies through the night. So if you are needing to get up through the night, try not to turn on the bathroom light. Now, that could be quite a challenge depending on what your house is actually like, but it's something to be aware of at the very least. Now, We've just spoken about melatonin and serotonin. Now, I did say that serotonin rises the moment that our eyes are exposed to light, and preferably sunlight. So one really good sleep hygiene tip that you can do is open the blinds as soon as you wake up. So opening the blinds as soon as you wake up, taking a nice deep breath in and out, fills you with serotonin, which wakes you up and fills you with those happy, calm, and content feelings in your body. What this also does, though, is allowing the daylight and the sounds of the morning flood into your body. This stimulates and wakes up your brain as well. It also helps to reset your body clock. and ensures that your melatonin levels remain on awake until the evening. So that's really key there. Also, having adequate exposure to daylight by spending some time outside during your day will also help to regulate your day and night's natural cycles in the brain. So that's another sleep hygiene tip there to be aware of. Sorry, I'm just turning my page as I read my notes, hence the pause. And a couple of other tips that I've got there is at nighttime, as you're preparing to go to sleep, in an ideal world, what we want to try to do is not be exposed to blue light up to 1 to 2 hours before you decide it's sleep time. Now, blue light, what is blue light? It's not a blue light disco from the 80s/90s. What blue light is, it's the back screen light that shines from devices. So for example, TVs, laptops, computers, iPhones all emit a blue light. And that blue light interrupts our melatonin levels. Okay, so I just mentioned before about the exposure to light and how we want to try to avoid exposure to light. The exposure to blue light and screens can actually interrupt the production of melatonin in our bodies. So in an ideal world, what we want to try to be doing is avoiding screens about 1 to 2 hours before you decide to go to sleep. Now, this is a really interesting one because as a mum, often what you probably find that you're doing is by the time you've put the kids to bed and done all the household tasks that need to be done to reset for the next day, you really just want to crash down in front of the TV for a little while or just chill in front of your phone and have a scroll through your social media or whatever it might be. And you just feel that you need that time out for yourself. So this is a hard one to balance because you may really just crave that time alone to yourself and say sitting in front of Netflix or something of an evening. But at the same time, you don't want to miss those sleep trains and you want to be getting to bed at a decent hour, preferably before 10:30. So that's a lot to cram in is your downtime plus allowing 1 to 2 hours of non-screen time. There are many ways that we can try to work around that. And for me personally, what I do is I do watch TV of a night time. I go through phases and I find particularly around the time when I'm having my period is the time that I crave the TV and just that tuning out of things. So that's generally when I allow myself to watch TV. And then during, the ovulation stage of my monthly cycle, I find that I don't really want to watch TV as much or be exposed to blue lights so much. So on those nights, then I'm very happy to just go to bed and allow myself to have that 1 to 2 hours of downtime of just reading before I go to sleep. But when I am watching TV, this is what I do. I will watch TV, but then I make sure that I've left about half an hour to read a book in bed or in a comfy place before I fall asleep. And this just helps me to turn my brain off too. Because not only are we, particularly when we're watching TV, not only are we being exposed to that blue light, we're also switching on different parts of our brain. So have a think about when you've watched, for example, a scary movie or a thrilling TV show or something like that. When we watch those type of shows, we are making our adrenaline rise, basically. Our adrenaline is the hormone that is responsible for the fight or flight. So we don't have, our body actually cannot tell whether we are in a real life or death situation or whether it's just something that's happening, for example, on the TV or there's a slight bit of stress going on in our life. what our body does is it picks up on the triggers of something's happening, and it starts producing adrenaline. And we can't say, hey, body, like, just stop producing this adrenaline right now because I'm just watching a TV show. So when you are watching those scary movies or thrilling TV shows or whatever it might be, then your adrenaline does rise, and that can also affect your quality of sleep moving into your night, because you've still got those hormones flowing through your body, that adrenaline flowing through your body. And of course, your brain is very active as a result of that as well, because having adrenaline running through our bodies heightens our sense of alertness as well. Now, heightens our sense of alertness. This is the bit where I'm going to talk to you about caffeine. So we knew we were going there, didn't we? So caffeine, this is an important sleep hygiene tip to be aware of, because when we have caffeine, say for example, it might be coffee, but remember that caffeine comes in many other different sources as well. So this could be through soft drinks, could be through chocolate as well, cocoa, all those type of things as well. Even tea, black tea, green tea also has some elements of caffeine in there as well. But let's just talk about, say, coffee for a moment. So coffee peaks in your body about 30 minutes after you've consumed it, but it can last in your body for up to 10 to 14 hours. So if you're having caffeine too late in the day, this can affect your ability to fall into a deep and healing sleep, and can be the cause of light or broken sleep on a regular basis. So it's something to be aware of. I mean, caffeine affects people in many different ways. I'm very sensitive to caffeine, but I also know people that say that they can easily have a cup of tea of an evening or a coffee in an evening, and that does not affect their sleep. So it is a very individual thing. Now, why did I mention before, why did I link caffeine with hormones and adrenaline just before? Well, the reason for that is because what caffeine does, it actually stimulates your adrenal glands and produces adrenaline as a result. It produces a hormone called, I'm not sure if I'm going to be pronouncing this right, but I'm going to give it a shot, and not a coffee shot, but it produces a hormone called adenosine, and it builds up during the day to make you feel really tired. And it can usually take 12 to 16 hours of this buildup before sleep becomes unavoidable. Now, I think I've jumped a point there, because I was trying to link just a moment ago the production of adrenaline and how caffeine can then produce or affect your body in terms of adrenaline. So I want you to have a think about this. So when you wake up in the morning and you're having, say you wake up in the morning and you have a coffee. So when you have a coffee, you feel alert, don't you? When I used to drink coffee, and I don't anymore because the effects of caffeine on my body is just too much for me to be able to handle. But when I did used to drink coffee, I used to joke about it being my smart juice, because I'd have my coffee and I'd rock up to work and I'd just pump out all this work, and I'd be really clear and concise, and just there was no brain fog there. I just felt like I was, you know, able to get this stuff done, basically, which, I mean, was great at the time, but what that was actually doing was, it wasn't smart juice that I was having, it was the adrenaline pumping through my body as a result of the caffeine. And like I mentioned before, adrenaline produces that a fight or flight sense, where you have this heightened sense of alertness. So just have a think about that there, around caffeine and a heightened sense of alertness. And see if that triggers anything for you, or you're nodding your head or anything like that. And we can explore caffeine at another point in another podcast, or if you want to get some more information, you're certainly welcome to contact me. I do dive much more into this in my Busy Women's Monthly membership as well. And in fact, in September, we're really focusing on sleep. So we'll be diving deep down into this particular topic and caffeine and adrenaline, etc. But that's pretty much where I'm going to leave it at this podcast, because I just basically wanted to explain to you today what sleep hygiene is, first and foremost, because it's not clean sheets. It is the process that you're doing and practices that you're doing to help you get the best restorative sleep that you can get through your evening. Basically, the reasoning for this, why we want to be getting really good restorative sleep, is because that's your sleep, and restorative sleep is how your body repairs itself. It is how you can become your optimal self. And sleep is super important for things such as reducing excess weight on your body, reducing stress on your body as well, repairing vital organs. I could go on and on about why sleep is so important. In fact, this is... I guess a bit of a weird statement coming from a personal trainer, but I do believe that sleep is probably more important than exercise. Exercise is certainly very important, and it's got a lot of health benefits as well, but sleep is just as, if not more, important. So I want you to have a think about what your nightly routine looks like and how you can improve your sleep hygiene practices. Like I mentioned before, if you are wanting to delve down deeper into sleep and learn much more about sleep, then I'm going to be discussing our topic of the month in September is on sleep. This month in August, and I'm talking August 2020, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we're focusing on stress in the Busy Women's Monthly Membership. And stress and sleep are kind of interlinked. They go really well hand in hand. And this is where I'll be talking a lot more about your adrenal glands as well and the impact of stress on your body. So if you are interested in learning more about those and getting some group coaching calls while you're at it, and some support and accountability for moving forward on your health or fitness journey, then make sure you get in contact with me or check out my webpage, which has got a link to the Busy Women's Monthly Membership. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I do hope that you learned a little bit from this one. And I would really love for you to, if you are listening through iTunes, if you can provide a review, because the more reviews I get, and preferably 5-star reviews, but the more reviews I get on iTunes, the more people I'm actually able to reach with this podcast. And that is my ultimate goal, to be able to help as many people as I can to improve their health and fitness and have optimal health. Thank you for joining me, and I'll talk to you again soon.